Hi, Kayla.
Hello.
Hi, we are good to go.
Sounds good.
All right, so let's start with your year of graduation, including if you finished up spring, summer, fall, and your major or majors.
Okay, yeah, so I graduated in 2022, finished in the spring, and my major was composition.
Oh, excellent. And what was your principal instrument?
My principal instrument was guitar.
Great. And all right, we will get to your history later. But for now, let's talk about your current employment. Where do you work? What do you do?
Yeah, so I'm currently a officer in the U.S. Army, and I am a flight school student. So UH-60, currently flying the UH-72 Lakota.
I will flaunt my ignorance that I don't know what the Lakota is, but my impression is that the Army has rotary aircraft and the fixed wing is the Air Force. So I'm guessing this is a type of helicopter.
Yep, it's a type of helicopter. I can get into the specifics. We do have some fixed wing, but it's mostly rotary wing in the Army.
Got it, got it. I suppose it, beyond that, if you want to, again, for the less educated buggers, is this, let's say, I think of helicopters as their attack helicopters and then their rescue helicopters. There's probably like freight helicopters, although I bet they're called something else. What type of helicopter is your thing?
Yeah, so I see what you're saying. There's a bunch of different types of helicopters, and you're right. They do correspond with a certain mission. So there's an Apache, which is their attack helicopter. You have the Black Hawk, which is a utility helicopter, and that also has a medevac element, which is what eventually I'll be doing. They also have the Chinook, which is like your cargo, and then C-12, which is the Army's fixed wing. There's technically a school down here for it, but it's not technically a rotary wing aircraft. And everybody starts out at flight school flying the Lakota, which is a smaller starter.
It's like a trainer.
Helicopter. Yeah, it's like a trainer.
Okay. So you say you were in the Army and now you're flight school in order to. So the idea is that, are assuming you get through this program well, is the idea that you're going to be a pilot or that you're going to, like, because you said you're an officer. Care to share the rank?
Yeah. I'm a second lieutenant. I commissioned in 2022. Mm-hmm. And I commissioned as a medical officer. So I didn't go straight into the aviation branch. I went to the medical branch, actually.
Okay.
And then, you know, some officers go straight into flight school and to the aviation branch, but I wanted to do medevac specifically, and the only way to kind of get medevac and ensure that your airframe is a medevac airframe is to commission as a medical officer and then transfer over to aviation after the fact. So
gotcha.
So because that's the only kind of thing I would want to do, like in the Army in terms of like rotary wing flying, would be medevac. So I commissioned 2022. I didn't know this when I went through Berkeley, actually, that Berkeley is associated with ROTC.
Yeah.
So while I was at Berkeley, yeah, I was shocked when I learned that when I started school in 2018 at Berkeley.
We'll get into the history more later, but.
Okay. Sounds good.
In terms of, so right now you said you commissioned and now you're in flight school. How long a program is that?
It's quite long. So it all depends on the person, basically, like time you get to flight school and all that. But there's a process. I actually have a document right here. It lays out all the days. First phase is obviously your commissioning program. So for me, it was 4 years of ROTC. And then you have to go through BULIC, which is your basic officer leadership course. For me, as a medical officer, that was longer than the aviation folks. So my BULIC was about 3 months down in the San Antonio in Texas. Then after you're done with that, you do SEER, which is your Survival Evasion Resistance Escape School. Teach you how to kind of evade, you know, interrogation and, you know, POW stuff. Can't really talk about that much. But after that is when you actually start flying. So that's what they call the initial entry rotary wing common core. So that's when you start flying the 72s.
And that's where you are.
And that takes about, yeah, that's where I'm at right now. So 25 days into common core. So we started flying about a month ago. So.
And how long is that expected to go?
It's 6 months total, 110 training days.
Gotcha. And at
who's
that,
counting?
And at that point, do you join a medevac unit in theory, or is there yet more stuff to do?
Oh, there's more. There's a lot more, actually. So as if you thought that wasn't enough, after you're done flying the 72s, you're qualified as a Lakota pilot. After that, you go on to your advanced airframe. In my case, as a medevac officer, I'll learn how to fly the Black Hawk. And that is for about 4 months, 65 flight hours. But if you're not a medevac officer and you're like a Chinook pilot or a C-12 or an Apache person, it's different. So Apache is like 6 months, but for me, it'll be 4 months. So then after the Black Hawk course, that's when I'll move on to the unit and actually do medevac stuff.
That I can't help but feel that the Army is investing an enormous amount of time into you. Is there a certain amount of time that you're then obligated to serve in the Army?
Yep. So they actually just changed the ADSO. That's what they call it. I have a 10-year contract after graduating flight school.
That's a while. That'll take you,
yeah,
I'm guessing,
it's a long time.
Into your mid-30s or something by the time.
Yeah, and I've already been in for 4 years, so.
And those four count toward the 10? Or,
nope.
Or no?
Nope.
Four
so,
plus
10, yeah.
Yeah.
So the 10 doesn't start till after flight school. But I do want to say, like, that 10-year thing is not typical of the military. Like, you have contracts that are maybe 4 years, like, active duty, but, like, flight school is an anomaly. You know what I mean?
Because it's so much time and money they're spending training you.
Oh, yeah. Like, I think they're investing, like, almost $1 million into each person in flight school in terms of training and salary and whatnot, so.
Well, yeah. Impressive. I am curious, my impression, and again, I speak with somebody who knows a whole lot less about military stuff, especially modern, than anyone who's in the military. Although I think I have a little bit of working knowledge. So my impression about officers is that they're the officers who really are, like, in command of other people, other troops, right? And then there are the officers where you have the rank of officer, but it's because you're doing a very complicated or technical job, but you're not directly really in charge of anybody else. Is that accurate?
Yeah.
And if so, like, which type will you be?
So I think you're thinking about the difference between commissioned officers and warrant officers. They're technically both officers by trade, if that makes sense, but the only difference is commissioned officers have gone through the formal commissioning process through either ROTC, a senior military academy, or officer candidate school. Warrant officers, on the other hand, are your technical experts, like Black Hawk pilots, any pilot really. There's a whole bunch of different warrant officers in every field. They're just subject matter experts, like supply, transfers, like anything really.
Right.
So for me, I'm a commissioned officer. So I went through 4 years of ROTC, and I'm a second lieutenant. You know, the warrant officers, their ranks are, you know, warrant officer one, warrant officer two, et cetera. And they look different too.
Okay. So I guess I'd say, assuming, you know, everything goes according to plan and you finish flight school and, you know, the unit, like, are you going to have people who you're their direct officer and they report to you?
Yep, those are the commissioned officers. So the commissioned officers are the one with like the leadership responsibilities, more
And
so than
you'll
the
be
warrant
one of them.
officers. Yeah. Yep, I'll be the commissioned officer. Yep.
Awesome. That's great. So, can you? Here's a question. I often ask people how many hours a week do they work, and maybe that works a little differently in the military. Maybe it doesn't. Can you? How would you even answer that question? And again, I'm aware that it might be a stupid question in your case, but you know what I mean. Like.
No stupid questions. Well, flight school is the schedule is challenging, and I say this again because flight school is really an anomaly. I've had so many different jobs in the military so far, some better than others, some having better schedules than others. Flight school is there's nothing that can prepare you for that. You know what I mean? Like the amount of hours you work, like the sheer workload, the memorization, not even this is not even counting the flying you do every day. But to answer your question, in flight school, factoring in the studying and stuff, I'm probably working about 75 hours a week.
Wow. Well, thank you for making time for this conversation.
Yeah, it's all good. I wish I had like this info when I was at Berkeley, so.
and all right, here's a potentially awkward question. So let's say this is not about you. But
Okay.
okay, if somebody with your background and they went through ROTC, get commissioned to whatever, and then they go to flight school. And then, flight school doesn't work out, right? They can't handle they don't die in a crash, but it's like it's not going well. They hate it, whatever. What would then happen to them, right? Is there an off ramp? And if so, what would they end up doing?
I'm not totally sure. I'm not totally sure if like you still have the 10-year ABSO or not after starting. I'm assuming something can be done, but I don't like the military. You can't just be like, hey, I don't really like my job. I think I'm gonna quit. Like that's not a thing.
Right.
I'm assuming that if you go to someone and say, hey, this isn't working out for me. Like I need to transfer branches. I need to work. I mean, there's probably something that you can do. But the only problem is I'm not sure if you'd still owe that time because they still sent to here, moved to here, paid
Right.
for how many, days of training you've had, whatnot, especially having gone through like the pipeline is not like even before starting flying, like you still have to go through Bullock and SEER and all that. So it's not just the flying stuff. So I'm sure something can be done. I've known people who are like, nope, this is not for me. And then they just reverted back to being enlisted or being a warrant officer. But I don't know what the like what how much time they owe, if that makes sense.
Got it. Not to, yeah, as I said, a little awkward, but in other words, there are still jobs in the military that don't involve being a pilot, just you end up doing one of those,
Oh
I suppose.
yeah. For sure, yeah. I mean, I wasn't, for a long time. I wouldn't even consider myself one yet because I'm only about a month into flying, so I mean, I guarantee you that if you put in all the time and effort to make it to flight school and the amount of tests you have to take and flight physicals and all that, like you'll be fine. If you go through that, I think you'll enjoy it.
Got it, got it, got it. So, let's put it this way. I think I mentioned privately that, here we are 240-ish interviews in. You're my first, active duty military person.
Awesome.
And yeah, no, I'm thrilled.
Surprised.
And yeah, as I said,
Yeah,
I've
I'm
had people
surprised.
who were in the military. I've had, definitely like. Actually, even people went to military before Berkeley, but first commission. So, like, what one thing that I ask people is that to qualify for these interviews, you have to enjoy what you do. What is it about being an Army officer slash pilot? However you define that job, what is it about that that you enjoy?
I know it sounds kind of crazy, but I enjoy how challenging it is. I think there's something about like doing something really, really, really difficult and then being able to get through it that, you know, you build self-respect, you build confidence, like it's a whole, you just build like good life experience, you know? Mm-hmm. And I personally couldn't go through life being like, oh, I wonder if I would have made it through that. I wonder if, you know, I could have done that. Like, it's just send it and see what happens. You know what I mean? I didn't, you know, in my wildest dreams, commissioning out of Northeastern and Berkeley, graduating from Berkeley, think I'd ever go to flight school. Like that's was never on my bucket list. I never thought I could do something like that. But I think what I like about it is the challenge, the responsibility, and like just knowing that whenever I'm on the controls of the helicopter, I have the lives of like potentially like several people in my control. And that's not something I take lightly personally. So yeah, I think that kind of does it.
All right. That's great. And now you're in place. So do you, I take us through kind of like an hour by hour of what a typical day is like? And I'm not asking you to share state secrets.
Oh, no, don't worry. I won't. So I'll walk you through like a typical day of like a, I might choose, mm-hmm. Well, in flight school and in the Common Core Lakota phase, you do a week of AM flight line and a week of PM flight line. So 1 week you'll be in the flying in the morning, like very early in the morning, and 1 week you'll be flying in the afternoon. But I'll walk you through a day in the AM flight line. So usually, which, cause it starts tomorrow. So I'm like, oh, let's walk through my day tomorrow. Wake up around 4 a.m., head to the flight line. Yeah, I'm not used to it. Head to the flight line around, I have to be there at 5:30. So I'll get there around 5. I'll check my radios out, make sure my equipment's good to go. Head to the flight briefing at 5:30. So the whole class will get together at 5:30. Then we'll have a bunch of questions we need to memorize verbatim for the night before. It's probably about 10 questions or so. It varies. They're called daily questions about, you know, emergency procedures, limitations of the aircraft, et cetera. They'll pick people randomly and have you stand up and recite whatever question it was, which may seem a little bit not a big deal, but it's important. It's super stressful. So then you do that, and then you're released to your instructor pilots, and head to the aircraft around probably 6 o'clock, 6:15 in the morning. Do a quick pre-flight, run the aircraft up. We're flying until it probably like 6:30 to 9, because it's you and we call them stick buddies. You're assigned with one other student pilot. So it's you, your student pilot, and instructor, and you'll switch off and you'll go through whatever flight maneuvers are on the agenda for that day and finish up, shut down, come back, do some table talk, go through how the flight went, whatever. Get about like an hour, maybe an hour break or so, and then head to academics. So, and the academics can vary from like 3 hours to like 5 hours. So on an AM day, we'll get there at about 1 o'clock and then go to about 5 or 6, some days, sometimes 4, never really know. The reason why I'm saying that the work about like 75 hours a week is because the amount of studying you have to do after the day's ended, which personally I think is the worst part, because you're already so drained from flying and like this new things you learned. You have to go home and study.
Again, without going too deep into the details, like you say academics, what type of stuff do you learn there in the courses? Like,
yeah, so you learn like a whole bunch of stuff, like reading, map reading, like just you know, the systems of the aircraft, electrical, how things work, literally every single compartment, piece of equipment on the aircraft you learn in depth how to do. There's also computer programs that help you do flight planning and performance planning of the aircraft. So knowing, for example, like you can't go out and fly until you know, what your hover torque is going to be for that day. And if, you know, you're going to exceed any limitations, you're going to put the aircraft in any any like dangerous conditions or whatnot. So you have to do all that beforehand. So you're literally learning every single piece of equipment about the aircraft. Not only that, but you're also learning the culture of, you know, Army aviation, and then how to support the people that you're working for, the ground forces, and how it all kind of comes together. So it's not just, this is how you fly an aircraft. It's about, it's way more than that. So every day is different. I don't even know what we're, I think we're on, we're learning maps this whole week for the next 11 days. But yeah, it's not just flying. So hopefully that answers your question.
No, that absolutely does.
Yeah.
So usually when I sort of getting into the history, typically people start their stories, you know, around the time they're finishing up Berkeley. Although since you went through ROTC, clearly your story is a logical earlier starting point. So
yeah.
You know, I'd love to sort of hear maybe when you first thought about doing ROTC, kind of where that would work, and then talk about that, your ROTC experience, and then kind of all the way from there to what you're doing now, both what you were, you know, doing for it, but also kind of like where you were at mentally in terms of your career, what direction you wanted to go. Sounds like you weren't planning on medevac, you know, flying a medevac helicopter initially. So, yeah, sort of where does it begin? Were you like in high school, were you thinking ROTC? Are you from a military family?
No, I'm not from a military family or anything. I was, I got into Berkeley in my last year of high school, and I, to be honest with you, I joined because I needed to, a way to pay for Berkeley. And I mean, that's a lot of people join the military for college nowadays, but I was originally going to enlist in the Army until I heard about ROTC, which I, at the time, knew was a better, for me at least, a better path to take, because I knew I wanted to be an officer. So yeah, I started ROTC in 2018, and I did that through all 4 years of Berkeley.
Sounds like Berkeley's affiliated with Northeastern University for that. Is that what you were saying?
Yep. So basically they have a host school for ROTC, and Northeastern is like the host school. And then they have a bunch of satellite schools that can participate in the host school's ROTC program, if that makes sense.
Can I ask how many other Berkeley people were in the ROTC?
You know, some come and go, you know, every now and then, but I think me and one other person ended up getting through the whole program for 4 years, Berkeley alone. But there were some people who came and went.
All right. Can you talk just briefly about, like, was that like, so you had to sort of start freshman year Berkeley?
Yeah, for me, that was what it was going to be. You can a little bit later. You can start, I think, as late as your junior year of college. But there's going to be extra stuff you have to do to make it to commissioning on time with your senior class. Like, you'll probably have to go to basic training or something extra, because if you do all 4 years, you get all 4 years of the training. But if you only do like 2 years and join as a junior, you have to do extra stuff. Looking back, I probably would have liked to do it that way and not do all 4 years of ROTC, because it was just like, it was just basically like another major. And if anybody knew me back then, I really did not enjoy ROTC. I'll straight up say that. It was very stressful for no reason, really, looking back. I didn't really know what stress was back then.
Well, that's interesting. I guess, do you mind saying, like, what, can you just describe the ROTC experience a little bit? Like, what were you doing? How much time were you spending on it? What sort of stuff did they do? I mean, you know, not as much detail as what you're doing now, but just, I'm curious.
Oh, yeah, just really quick. It's like you go to PT, physical training a few days a week in the morning, and then you'll take, like, ROTC classes. Oh, you have to do, like, a lab on, like, Tuesdays and learn, like, basic tactics for, like, infantry and stuff. And then in the summertime, between your sophomore and junior year, I think it was, I don't even remember, junior, senior year, sometime in between, you have to go through advanced camp, which is, like, a month-ish long in Kentucky. It was just, like, a lot of, like, small things that kind of added up. It was, like, another major, and you had to learn a lot of stuff, and it was, like, a big competition to figure out where like what branch you would get and where you'd be get end up going into, like what unit you'd be getting into and all this stuff. So it's very competitive and stressful, which is the reason I didn't enjoy it. But
correct me if I'm wrong, my impression with ROTC, this may be totally off the wall, but my impression is that the people who do it, that like then there's some tests or other stuff, and like a third of them actually become officers and two thirds just end up like serving as enlisted people. Is that accurate?
I don't really know about the enlisted people thing. I think some people who do ROTC don't end up completing the program, but they still end up doing some of the like extracurricular stuff.
Okay.
I think the goal with ROTC is to commission, hands down. You know what I mean? But I mean, there is some people have their holdups. If you don't end up making it through ROTC, you always have the option to just go to a recruiting station and just enlist. But the goal is to commission.
Gotcha. So you make it through, and then when did you receive your commission?
May 12th, 2022. So, yeah, it was the 12th. So
that,
last
that's
year.
That's like about the day after commencement, or 2 days after commencement, right?
I think it was, I can't remember. I think it was a day or two after commencement. But, you know, looking back, and I hate to say it, Berkeley has been great, but the commissioning for me was like the thing I was looking forward to, because it was so difficult for me at the time.
Right. So yeah, it's funny. A lot of Berkeley people are wondering what they're going to do after college, and your path is quite set, or at least your path is set in the sense of the Army. Within there, there's a huge number of different things.
Yeah. I mean, for me, a job needs three things. And I've been telling this to everybody I know, because I feel like it really helps like in the job search. Job needs three things: people, purpose, and a good paycheck. I think if you get the right job in the military, like those three things can be checked off. You know what I mean? But right. I think a lot of people think of the military, they have a bad taste in their mouth about it. But you know, if you choose the right job and you make the right decisions, it's a really good career. I mean, I was skeptical about it. When I was going through ROTC, I had my doubts. Having a career in a non-music field was something that I never wanted, you know, and I know some people will agree with me when I say that, but I had to know that there are things out there that can like be really fulfilling that are not music, unfortunately.
I mean, like, cause I spoke with one person once who I think was hoping to get into the Army to play like one of those military bands. Had that been
your plan
once upon a time, or were you, was that?
Yeah, I mean, it could have been. For me, I always had this, I mean, I definitely could have done the Army band thing. For the Army band though, a lot of the instrumentalist positions are enlisted positions, they're not officer positions, and I didn't want to be enlisted. So that was off the table for me. Sure. But I think that would be a really cool job, really stable, and it would give you the music career that you wanted. But for me, if I'm gonna be in the military, I want to do something in the military. Like you can't fly Blackhawks as a civilian. You can't. It's just something that you can't do. So I want to do that, do my time, and then be done with it. If that makes sense.
Yeah, that does. So okay. So then, congratulations. You're 2 days after graduation. You're commissioned officer. So then what?
So then would go on to my basic officer leadership course, which I was talking about earlier. That's basically where you learn the fundamentals of being an Army officer. So for medical officers like myself, that training was in Fort Sam Houston, Texas, which is where all of your combat medics, all of your healthcare administrative officers, that's where all they go for their training.
Ask what drew you to the medical side of things?
That's a good question. My goal was always to actually attend PA school. Because I knew when you go to PA or medical school, you
don't... my ignorance, PA?
Oh, sorry, physician's assistant, yeah.
Okay.
And that was always my goal in the long run, but... And I know that you don't need a certain type of bachelor's degree to make it into those higher schools. Like you know, PA school, you don't have to study science. Medical school, you don't have to study biology or something, you know what I mean? So that was always the goal for me. So I wanted to be a medical officer to really have this. And yeah, so I did the bullet down in San Antonio. It was about 2.5 months or so. And then I got out of that. So I was fully qualified as a medical administrative officer in the RV. Had no, like, flight school was still not on my radar at that time. I ended up taking a job full time in the Vermont National Guard as a recruiting operations officer. And I ended up doing a few other things here and there. I went to mountain warfare school. I went to Senegal in Africa and led a healthcare team of physicians in a small clinic, which was really cool. And through that experience, I kind of realized that, you know, PA school would be cool, but I really want to do something like something unique and something that I could never do again. So my boss at the time was a Black Hawk pilot, previously a Black Hawk pilot, and he kind of helped me through the application process and recommended me for flight school. I ended up getting accepted for that.
Gotcha. That started some months ago.
Yeah,
great. And here you are. So.
Yep, here I am.
All right. So moving on to third part of the interview of three. Let me preface the next question by saying there is no right or wrong answer.
Okay. So,
these days, we're talking sort of last part to 2023 into 2024. What, if anything, is your current relationship with music?
It's a good question. So I still play music like all the time when I don't have a whole lot of free time nowadays, but when I get a chance, I just still do play. I actually still take composition lessons with a professor, not from Berkeley, but when I applied to a few composition graduate schools and I got accepted to a few and I met some good professors through that. So I actually do study with one person, you know, monthly. For composition.
Programs, you mean? For composition?
Yeah. Well, it's not like a degree program. It's just like, you know how in the composition department, you have like a one-on-one like lesson with an instructor.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm kind of doing that with someone I met through the application process of graduate school, which keeps me kind of involved with music and keeps it a part of my life because that was always something I was worried about, like taking a career in a non-music field was like still remaining connected to music and making sure that I foster that interest I have. So it's still a big part of my life. And just because, you know, you're in a, you know, non-music degree or non-music career doesn't mean you have to give that up entirely, you know?
Well, that's really amazing that you're doing that on top of your 75-hour a week.
Oh yeah, it's hard. I told my instructor, I said, by the time I graduate the Lakota phase of flights, one piece of music written and completed, because it was so much easier when I was working as a medical officer and a recruiting officer, like to write music and have all this free time. But now I'm lucky if I can, you know, on the Sunday get a few, like a page or two of music written, you know, but this is just a season of life that is going to be challenging. And then, you know, life will continue on as normal. So,
yeah, sure. And no, it's very great. So next question for you, obviously people in the military come from many different backgrounds. I'm guessing you're one of quite few who did undergrad at a music college.
yeah.
So let's say compared to everyone else there, let's say given where you are now, and you have been doing really well for yourself, is there anything you feel your Berkeley experience did particularly well to prepare you for what you're doing now? Beyond it being a college degree.
yes and no. I would say that Berkeley was helpful in having me really able to work well with people who, you know, I would never have met otherwise if that means from different backgrounds and different, you know, ways of life. I've met so many different unique people at Berkeley. I think that was an awesome experience. I think on the downside of Berkeley, I don't think anything could have prepared me for the amount of stress that flight school has given me. I don't think I wasn't ready for that kind of stress at the time of Berkeley. So I think it's kind of a progression, but Berkeley did, there's worthwhile degrees and then there's realistic degrees. Right. And I think that, Berkeley was a really worthwhile degree, and it like really fostered my creativity and my love for music, whatever. Realistic, probably not. I was going to go to PA school and I was going to do, I always had a plan with a music degree. So in that sense, no, I think you always need a plan if you're going to have an arts degree. I'm just trying to be realistic. I don't want to be negative, but that's just the way the world works now.
Sure. And the next question for you is, like, you got on your path quite early here. So, meaning, mm-hmm. right, you were at ROTC starting freshman year college. Most people at Berkeley aren't on any sort of career path until, after graduation, or if they're lucky, a couple internships pointing the way.
And
then, of course, even there's people, lots of people class of 2022 who haven't yet found that path. So for either or both of those groups, what advice do you have?
What advice do I have? I think just trying as much as you can in different areas of careers would be probably the most helpful. I had so many different jobs while I was at Berkeley and was exploring what I kind of wanted to do. I knew going into ROTC at the time was the right move. I, was paying for my school. I had a, full scholarship, like life was good. I didn't exactly know if I wanted to pursue the military as a career, but it was like ROTC was the thing that was going to make Berkeley a reality for me. And, if I didn't venture out and try new things, like going to ROTC and struggling and having a tough time and transitioning into that environment, then I would never have gotten to the place I am now. So I think the biggest piece of advice I'd give is to not be afraid to just, try new things. Cause, I could have been waiting. I always think about this. I could have been thinking about whether or not I would have gotten into flight school if, for the rest of my life, if I never had applied to it, And, I think that's just keep on, exploring new passions. I think that's the best piece of advice I'd give.
That's terrific. And for somebody at Berkeley who is, let's say either at Berkeley or post-Berkeley, maybe they're not in ROTC, but they're thinking about the military as a possible career, either long-haul career, even just kind of a temporary thing, right? For, it provides a lot of good benefits. Do you have any specific advice for them?
Yes. Advice number one is, find someone who's been through it and take them with you to the recruiting office. Because like people like me and people who have like worked with recruiters and worked with other people in the military, like they can help you navigate everything that the recruiters are going to tell you, everything that they're going to promise you, everything that they're not going to promise you, all that stuff. At the end of the day, a recruiter's goal is to get you to join, despite how good your quality of life is going to be. When I was trying to go, when I was trying to do the military thing in 2018, before I knew ROTC was a thing, I was about to enlist. And, I didn't even know ROTC was a thing. There could be in another life I was enlisted and trying to pay through Berkeley being enlisted. I would say try to explore all options, find people who have done it, get advice from them, and just, don't make any rash decisions, The military is a big commitment, and if you don't pick like the right job, it's very, very difficult to get out of it. And it's not for someone who can say, oh, I don't like this, I'm just going to quit. Like there's no quitting, I think, cause actually it's funny. My sister texted me today and she was like, she's getting her master's in, I think like nutritional study, trying to be a dietitian. She said, hey, do they have any dietitians in the Air Force? And I was like, Yes, but before you go, I will not allow you to go to the recruiter's office without me there. Like, you will be taking me to the recruiter's office, you know? So I think that's the biggest piece of advice. Like, find someone who's done it. Don't go through it alone. See what the best options are and shop around. You know, it doesn't have to be the Army. It doesn't have to be the Navy. Like, you know, see what will work best for you. They are getting you as an employee. You are joining an organization. You need to make sure that your morals, your ethics, your job, like everything about you aligns with that organization. You know what I mean?
Sure. Makes sense. Thank you for that. Well, Kayla, I just have one last question for you.
Sounds good.
Is, you have the mic. Is there anything we missed or anything else you'd like to say?
Let's think. I don't think so. I mean, I would say that, you know, despite what folks think about the military, you know, a lot of the military is just supporting, you know, the folks on the ground. Like, it's not what you might think about, like, you know, infantry and combat arms and all that. Like, a lot of it is not that. The military is just a big business, and you can find things in there that will have purpose. You can have a good career, and it can be worthwhile for you. So let's say, you know, if you're like someone who's, oh, I'm never going to join, like, I'd never do that, maybe consider it as an option. I was surprised when in 2018 it worked out for me. And, you know, flight school is definitely different. So I wouldn't base my experience on, you know, the typical active duty officer. It's definitely different for a lot of folks. So yeah, I mean, it's given me everything I have basically, and, you know, pursuing my wildest dreams flying is pretty incredible. So
that's great.
I think that's about it.
That's wonderful. Yeah, if I recall correctly, wasn't Prince William of Great Britain a medevac pilot?
I don't know about that one, but I will share this little hint of wisdom. I think his name was Carter Harmon, actually. He was a composition, he was a composer and clarinet player in, I think, World War II era. Uh-huh. And he was the first Army rotary wing pilot to successfully evacuate wounded soldiers in some battle in World War II. Like, the first, like, successful medevac rotary wing pickup. And this person, Carter Harmon, was a composer. And it just goes to show that, like, you know, musicians can be pretty incredible, you know, like, despite what people may think about having an arts degree and being an artist, you know, like, there's some awesome skills in that. And I thought that was amazing when I first read about his story. So if you have some free time, read about Carter Harmon, I think his last name is. So.
All right. That's it. Look him up. Well, hey, Kayla, I really enjoyed this conversation. Thank you once again for making the time.
Yeah, of course. I'm happy to hope it helps some of the students.
Yeah, I hope so too. And hey, best of luck with the rest of flight school.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right, have a wonderful evening.
You too. Take care.